A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents an Avon production. Starring Elvis Presley as Vince Everett in Jailhouse Rock. Copyright 1957. Now, a black and white painting shows a man's legs and feet facing away from us. As we scan up his back, more titles appear. Co-starring Judy Tyler as Peggy Van Alden, with Mickey Shaughnessy, Vaughn Taylor, Jennifer Holden, Dean Jones, and Ann Neyland. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Carrie Danahy and Paula Broussard. Read by Miles Neff. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. Screenplay by Gus Trosper. Based on a story by Ned Young. Music supervised by Jeff Alexander. Songs mostly by Mike Stoller and Jerry Lieber. Additional songs by Roy C. Bennett, Aaron Schroeder, Abner Silver, Sid Tepper, Ben Weissman. Produced by Pandro S. Berman. Directed by Richard Thorpe. Now, on a construction site, a coupe pulls up to some workers.
Here comes the sugar man.
This'll make the last payment on my car.
Yeah, but it's all worn out.
Where you been all this time, boy?
The driver stands up in the open car door and passes out checks.
Hardwell.
A young man approaches on a bucket scoop tractor.
Yippee!
His dark hair is styled in a pompadour.
May I give it a fortune?
The boss hands him a check.
What are you going to do with all that money?
I'm going to buy me a herd of chorus girls and make them dance on my bed.
Later, a bartender counts out dollar bills.
500, 5, 6, 7, $108.
Good week, Vince.
Vince invites him to arm wrestle.
You ready?
Yeah.
The burly bartender grips Vince's hand and squeezes. Vince grins as some men gather around.
Vince likes that kind of punishment. Someday he's going to learn.
The bartender strong-arms Vince's hand halfway to the bar top. A blonde woman sitting alone at the end of the counter eyes them. The bartender pushes Vince's arm all the way down.
Okay, drinks are on me.
Now that's the kind of athletic contest I appreciate. He's getting that boy.
Yes, sir.
I'll get you next week.
You bet, Vince.
The blonde, smoking a cigarette, saunters over to Vince.
Buy me a drink, cowboy?
Huh?
You're buying, aren't you?
Oh, sure. Jake, draw one for the lady.
I'll take a shot, if you can afford it.
Oh, I can afford it. One shot.
The bartender glares at the blonde, who grins at Vince.
I saw you here last week when you were cashing your check.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, you got nice hair.
She fingers his pompadour.
You know, I get through work around 4.
A man shoves her down.
Are you stupid little tramp?
Hey!
Vince gets up.
Hey, she didn't mean anything. I just bought her around for the house.
Keep out of this.
She wasn't out of line.
I told you to keep your mouth out of this.
Leave her alone.
The man turns on Vince.
Look, Buster, you want some teeth knocked out? Just keep it up.
You scare me. Women beaters always scare me.
Why don't you run along, Sonny, before I muss up your hair?
The man pours the shot down Vince's shirt. Vince socks him. As the man stumbles back, Vince jabs at his stomach. The stranger punches Vince in the face, then grabs his throat. Vince struggles to push the man off, palming the guy's chin. Now, the man throws a right hook. The crowd watches as Vince recovers. He punches the stranger, who slumps back against the wall.
Vince, he's had enough. He's got enough.
Vince decks him again. The man falls against the jukebox and slides to the floor. The crowd gathers around his limp body.
Hey, kid, you can hit.
Vince stares downward, his lip curled. The bartender checks the fallen man.
Somebody call a doctor. This guy's hurt bad.
Vince gapes, and his stance falters. Later, he stands before a judge.
You've been found guilty by a jury of your peers of the crime of manslaughter. You're hereby remanded to the custody of the sheriff, and you'll be transported to the state penitentiary, where you'll serve a term of not less than 1, nor more than 10 years of imprisonment.
Vince swallows hard in front of the judge's bench.
Court dismissed.
The bailiff takes Vince's arm and escorts him away. Later, a large prison sits at the end of a paved road. Inside, Vince stands in front of the warden's desk.
Tough wood, Chuck, huh?
Well, that's what we're here for, to teach you hooligans. It says here you killed a man with your bare hands. We don't use hands here, we use guns. Oh, and I'll tell you another thing we use for cons who don't toe the mark. The whip. Understand?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, sir.
The warden looks at a large chart.
I am putting you in with Hunk Houghton, an old-timer.
Vince stands still under the warden's stern gaze.
All right, that's all.
Thank you, sir.
A guard opens the office door. Later, Vince walks with the guard along a row of barred cells. He wears a denim prison jacket and pants. As the guard opens a cell door, Vince takes a step forward, then pauses.
And when do I finish my process?
No hurry, you got plenty of time.
The guard locks the cell door behind him. Inside, two cluttered shelves are mounted on the far wall near a set of bunk beds off to the side. A tiny sink sits in the corner. Standing in the middle of the jail cell, Vince eyes a guitar hanging on the wall. Several headshots of men, some of them playing guitars, are posted beside it. Vince takes the guitar and strums it with his thumb. The guard comes back with another convict.
Hang it up.
The stocky prisoner enters.
Put it up where you got it.
Sure. I know you're touchy about it.
Vince sits on the bottom bunk.
I live here. I'm touchy about everything.
Hunk writes at a small desk.
You're on my bunk.
Hunk's gaze stays on his paper. Vince looks around, then gets up and stares at Hunk. He sits on the floor.
Is this okay?
Hunk continues writing.
My name's Vince Everett.
You know my name.
Glad to know you.
Yeah.
Hunk turns to Vince.
You're not through processing?
Not yet.
What about your haircut?
What about it?
What, do you want a good one or a fresh fish special?
A fresh fish special.
They hack it up. A good one will cost you 3 packs of cigarettes.
I haven't got 3 packs.
You got any money?
Nope. Spent it all on my lawyer.
Hunk reaches into a footlocker and hands Vince a few packs of cigarettes.
I loaned you 3 packs, you paid back 4.
Vince looks at the trunk full of cigarettes.
Kind of silly saving up cigarettes like that.
Hunk takes the packs out of Vince's hand and puts them back in the trunk.
You'll learn.
Later, Vince sits in a white smock as a barber shaves off his dark hair with an electric razor. Later still, Vince enters his cell. He smiles, rubbing the closely shorn sides of his head. The young man leans casually against the bunk beds and looks at Hunk, who is still writing. Hunk eyes the haircut and smirks.
Okay, tell me about the cigarettes.
I run a business, Sonny. I'm what you might call one of the top cons in this stir. I got representatives in the tailor shop, commissary, sick bay, kitchen, and shoe shop, and they all work for me. You want a good haircut, I fix it. You want a good pair of shoes, a nice fitting shirt, you ask me. Just like everything else, you gotta pay for it. And this here is the coin of the realm.
Well, where do you get the cigarettes?
You trade with guys who don't smoke them. You buy them, you steal them, you cheat from them, you fight for them, just like you do for money on the outside.
I'm broke. I'll never accumulate any cigarettes.
The state pays you 18 cents a day. That's a start. You play ball with me, and I'll stake you.
It's real nice of you.
I can't have my cellmate walking around looking like a bum. I got a reputation to live up to. Another thing is your job. You been assigned yet?
Not yet.
You probably draw the coal yard. New fish always do. It's hard and it's dirty. Maybe I can get you out of it. Maybe I can get you assigned to the print shop where I am.
How many packs?
5 cartons of cigarettes. And I'll loan them to you.
What interest rate?
You're learning fast. The interest rate won't be too high. You just do what I say when I say it. That's the basis of my organization.
Vince eyes Hunk and twiddles his fingers.
No, thanks.
Huh?
No, I'll take my chances.
Suit yourself.
Thanks anyway, though.
It's no skin off my behind.
Now, Vince and several prisoners shovel coal into wheelbarrows. Vince's face and bare chest are black with dust. He and another worker rest and wipe their sweaty faces.
Hey, guard, how about a water call?
One water call every 2 hours. You ought to know the rules by now.
In this heat?
Knock it off, Mac, and get back to work.
That new warden a jerk. Ever since he come here, this can ain't fit to live in.
Later in his cell, Vince lies in the upper bed while Hunk sits at his desk.
Hey, Houghton.
I hear you calling.
What are we going to do about conditions? I've had a belly full.
I got less than a deuce to go. I'm going to sit here and suffer my little heart out.
Well, not me. I'm going to do something about it.
I better quiet those stairs down.
Hunk gets up and takes his guitar off the wall. He sits, props the instrument on his leg, and plays.
How about some cigarettes?
I don't know. I can't take this anymore. I'm up in the morning with the rising sun. I work like a slave till the day is done. Just working and sleeping and nothing more. And every day is just like the day before. One more day. One more day. One day older and nearer to my Lord. One more day. Listen to the prayer of a lonely man, living day to day the best he can. Give me the strength to carry my load. Glory waits for me at the end of the road. One more day. One more day. One day older and nearer to my Lord. One more day.
That's mighty pretty, Hunk. Give us another.
Oh, quit now, Hunk. Give us another.
Vince watches Hunk with interest as the guitarist takes a bow.
Thanks a lot, neighbors. Appearing before you has given me a big hunk of pleasure. I hope to be around picking and singing for you again real soon.
Hey, what about did you learn to sing like that?
That used to be my trade, Sonny Buck. I was singing country music before the words were invented. And I was on the stage with the best of them. Eddie Arnold, Roy Acuff.
Did you make good money?
I made $2 a week. I was swimming in gravy in those days.
Okay, get on to the sad part.
A woman and a bank did it. She got used to bonded bourbon. I robbed the bank.
I thought you were making $200 a week.
Well, bookings got a little thin.
Vince stares at the ceiling.
You mean you made all that money just singing?
Why not?
Vince looks over at the guitar hanging on the wall.
Mind if I horse around with it?
He hops off the bunk.
Don't break any strings.
Vince takes the guitar.
Well, I can sing better than you.
Vince holds the guitar vertically on one knee.
I used to have an uncle that had one of these things. I fooled around with it some. Here's one of his songs.
You're so young and beautiful, and I love you so. Your lips so rare, your eyes that shine, shame the stars that glow. So fill these lonely arms of mine and kiss me tenderly. Be forever young and beautiful to me.
Lying in bed, Hunk raises his eyebrows.
You like my singing?
The stocky guy sits up.
You don't know one thing about the guitar.
The boarders liked it.
They're what you might call a captive audience. Here, let me show you a few chords.
Hunk takes the guitar. Later, Hunk positions Vince's fingers on the neck of the guitar.
Now, that's a C major chord. That's a big one. Now, try the G.
Hunk turns his back to Vince and drops his head on the top bunk.
You will never make a guitar player. You got no rhythm in your bones.
Well, I never heard of anybody paying money to hear a guitar player.
Well, don't pay any attention to me. I was only in the business for 10 years, that's all.
Yeah, I read you loud and clear.
Try it again.
Hunk shakes his head as Vince passes a thumb across the strings. Now in the coal yard, Vince empties his shovel into a wheelbarrow. Hunk strides by in a baseball cap.
Vince, take a water break.
Vince stops shoveling.
Hey, Screw. Want to get some water?
Vince follows Hunk to a water fountain and takes a drink.
We're going to have a prisoner's show. A committee from the state legislature is coming up here to investigate, and the warden wants to throw up a smoke screen, so he said to put on a show.
He's all heart, that warden.
Who do you think's going to produce the show?
You.
Who told you? You know, I got a spot for you in the show. I'll teach you a new tune.
I don't know. What's the percentage in singing for a bunch of cons?
Experience, you lunkhead. That's the percentage.
I'll consider it.
Fine, you do that. While you're about it, consider the fact this show is going on television coast to coast.
You're kidding.
No, it's a show called Breath of a Nation. I guess they figure we got color.
I considered. I'm on. Hey, what do you think's prettier, red or blue?
Red or blue what?
Color for a convertible.
Gee.
Now, Hunk stands on a stage.
Are you guests of the state gonna be mighty sorry this next boy is a short-termer? Because he sure sings pretty. Let's hear it for Vince Everett.
Vince walks out holding a guitar. Several convicts back him up on instruments.
There's no joy in my heart, only sorrow. And I'm sad as a man can be. I sit alone in the darkness of my lonely room. And this room is a prison to me. I look out my window, and what do I see? I see a bird.
Now a prisoner empties a mailbag.
Hurry up, fellas. I gotta count my fan mail.
Hunt grabs a handful of letters as two fellow inmates sort through the mail.
Vince Everett.
He picks up a couple more.
Everett?
He tosses them aside and checks another.
Everett?
As the other prisoners sort letters into mail cubbies, Hunt paces, rubbing his chin thoughtfully. He sits on the edge of a desk, his brow furrowed in thought, then motions to the guys.
Hey, you birds, come here.
They saunter over to him.
How'd you like to make 5 cartons apiece?
What? Who do you want us to murder?
This is the easiest money you'll ever make as long as you live. All you gotta do is to keep your mouth shut. I mean about the mail. I made a mistake and I gave the kid the best spot in the show. Naturally, if word gets out all this mail's for Vince Everett, it makes me look bad, follow? I mean me, the professional, see?
I see.
If within a week the word's not around, you get the cigarettes.
Yeah, but it's Everett's mail. Who's gonna keep him quiet?
If I know the warden, Everett'll never get it.
Later in the cell, Hunk approaches Vince.
We'd be a natural together. Both ex-cons. The publicity would be sensational. Look.
Hunk points to a calendar.
You get out in 6 months. I follow you 12 months later. What do you say, boy?
You mean we sing together?
Together alone, it makes no difference. We hire a couple of other acts. We got our own show. We play the circuit and we roll.
Well, I don't know anything about how to get any bookings.
Let me worry about the business end. Here.
Hunk shows him a piece of paper.
I've made a contract for us. We split everything right down the middle. Sit down here a minute.
Vince doesn't move.
Come on, boy, sit down here.
Hunk jiggles his arm.
Sign right there.
Vince sits at the small desk and looks over the contract.
Hey, how come you're willing to give me 50% of your earnings? I mean, like you said, you're the one that's got the experience and the name.
One simple reason. I got faith in your possibilities. Sure, you're never going to command the dough I can, but with training, you'll do all right. Besides, I need a young man to appeal to the kids. I'm leveling with you, boy.
Hunt Hunk's hand rests on Vince's shoulder. Vince studies Hunk, then the contract.
Alone, son? You'd be like a lamb in a pack of wolves. Go ahead.
Vince scratches his nose with the end of the pencil, then signs the contract. Hunk watches closely over his shoulder. Later, Vince and Hunk sit among hundreds of inmates in a mess hall. The prisoner next to Hunk sets down his fork.
I wouldn't feed this garbage to a razorback hog.
Yeah, I thought the investigating committee was going to fix things up around here.
Investigating committee? What do those jerks see? What the warden wants them to see? Slop. Slop. Slop!
The inmate stands up and throws his plate across the room. Dozens of other inmates chuck their plates. As Vince gets up and hurls his, Hunk pulls him down. Several guards fight with the unruly prisoners. As Vince and Hunk head out of the mess hall, Vince looks back at the commotion. A guard grabs him.
Come on, back to your cell.
Vince punches the guard. Another guard approaches and Vince socks him. As a third guard restrains Vince, several others throw smoke bombs. White gas fills the mess hall as two guards struggle with Vince. Later, the warden looks on as a guard ties Vince's wrist to a pipe overhead.
All right.
Another guard whips Vince's bare back.
One. Two.
The warden counts.
Three.
Vince cringes.
Four. Five.
Later, Hunk sits at his desk with his back to the cell door. Two guards return Vince to the cell. His jacket is draped over his shoulders. As the guards close the door behind him, Vince drops his head and fists onto the top bunk's mattress. Hunk watches the guards leave, then goes to Vince's side. The stout man lifts up the shoulder of Vince's jacket and peeks at his back. Grimacing, he lays the jacket down.
I didn't have money enough to buy the grease, kid. The price was $300 and I didn't have it.
I wish you did.
That's a lesson to remember. Without money, you might as well be dead.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the sympathy you'll get from me. Pity's a commodity, and here you buy it and sell it just like anything else.
And what are you, man? Some kind of an animal?
That's right, buddy. I'm an animal in a jungle, and I got a motto. Do unto others as they would do unto you, only do it first.
Vince nods, bleary-eyed.
Yeah. That's right. Do it first.
He rests his head back on the mattress.
And it's just as bad on the outside. Worse. Remember that.
I don't aim to forget it.
Hunk turns back to his desk, then gives Vince a sidelong glance. Now, a 12-month calendar printed on a single page is taped to the cell wall. The first 8 months have X's through them. A hand reaches up and crosses out September, then X's appear over the last 3 months. Now a hand reaches up and tears off the calendar, revealing another. X's cross off 4 more months. Now, a guard walks down the cell block and unlocks Vince's door.
Everett, you ready?
Vince puts on his sport coat.
Be sure and drop in on us when you're in this part of the country. Always glad to put you up for the night.
Just go away, screw. I want to say goodbye to my friend.
Vince shakes Hunk's hand.
See you in about 10 months.
That's right, boy. Together we'll knock him over. Now, don't forget the name of the joint, the Florida. I roll it to Sam Brewster. He's the owner. He's an old buddy of mine. I'm positive he'll give you a job.
Okay. See you.
Take it easy.
Later, Vince enters the warden's office. The warden takes out a handful of dollar bills and counts out a few.
Well, here's what the state owes you, $54.
Do I have to pay income tax on it?
Don't give me any sass, bub. And get out of here.
I'll try not to break down.
Vince heads for the door.
Oh, wait a minute.
The warden pulls out a paper-wrapped bundle from a cabinet and hands it to Vince.
Here's something belongs to you.
What's this?
Letters you got after that television show. You're a real star, Everett.
How come I didn't see these before?
Because I didn't want you to.
Well, that's against the law, keeping me from an inmate.
Have me arrested. Now get out. And don't come back.
You've been just like a father to me, Warden.
Vince opens the door and backs out.
Sir.
Now an old man shows Vince into a small hotel room. The old man turns on the lights, then sets down the paper-wrapped bundle. He takes a cigar out of his mouth and points to the mussed-up bed.
I'll send a woman up to make the bed directly.
Okay.
Vince flips through some papers on a dresser. The man waits behind him.
What do you want?
Well, custom to tip a man. He brings you to your room.
Well, I'm starting a new custom. No tip.
No law against trying.
As he leaves, Vince steps over to a window and looks out between its sheer curtains. With a hand in his pocket, he saunters over to the bundle. As he unties the twine that holds it together, a few letters fall out. He picks one off the top and opens it, then lies belly down on the bed and props himself up on his elbows to read.
Dear Vince, I saw you on television today singing from the jail, and I thought you looked real cool. My name is Mary Jane Hamilton, and I'm 15 with blue eyes and brown hair. My measurements are 33, 25, 36. Do you think I should reduce? If you ever come to Riverport, how about giving me a blast on the phone? My number is Lockwood 4357.
As Vince folds the letter and places it back in the envelope, an older, heavy-set woman enters the room with fresh sheets. Vince gets up and heads to the door.
Where's the nearest pawn shop?
Oh, down the street to the right, a couple of blocks. What you gonna do, buy yourself a diamond ring?
No, I'm gonna buy a guitar and sing love songs to you.
He flashes a sarcastic smile. Now a neon sign reads, Club La Florita. Inside, a burlesque dancer slinks on a stage behind a bar. A brunette woman enters and waves to the bartenders.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Peggy.
Shorty?
Hi, Peggy.
Peggy sits at the bar beside Vince. She looks him over, then turns her attention to the stage. Vince twiddles his fingers, and he looks Peggy up and down. She wears a skirt suit, and her hair is done in a wavy sideswept bob. Shifting under Vince's staring gaze, she smiles at him, then returns her eyes to the stage. They both watch the dancer. Her bare legs strut in front of them, trailing the sequined gown, which drops away. Smiling brightly, Peggy sets her purse on the bar and claps for the stripper. Vince watches Peggy as she steps over to a jukebox and lifts its glass lid. As she writes in a notepad, the bartender steps over.
How's your boy doing?
Large. He's on top. Crying to the Stars got 84 plays.
Yeah? I'm sick of it.
Oh, now watch your tongue, Shorty.
Peggy sits back down on the stool by Vince. As he stares at her pert chest, she glares at him.
Tell me what you see.
About 5'4", weight 115, pretty well stacked.
Well, I'm glad you find me pleasing.
I don't find you nothing.
Then why are you staring?
I'm interested in the jukebox.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't know about mechanics.
I don't either.
He picks up his guitar.
I'm a singer.
Indeed.
Hey, look. I just saw you writing down some figures in your little book, and I wondered what you were doing. So don't get any fancy ideas about yourself.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm afraid I misunderstood.
I'm afraid you did.
Well, if you buy me a fresh drink, I'll tell you about the figures.
Buy your own drink.
Is yours the approved manner with ladies in the backwoods?
Just tell me about the figures.
All right. I'm an exploitation man in the record business. I work for Mickey Alba. You've heard of him.
Word sometimes gets to the backwoods, yeah.
Well, I plug his records with disc jockeys, jukeboxes,
stores. A stocky,
stores.
Balding man approaches.
Oh, hello, Sam.
Oh, hello, kid.
This is Sam Brewster, the cheerful owner.
Vince Ebert, did you get Hunk Houghton's letter?
Mm-hmm. So you want a job, huh?
When do I go to work?
Whenever you want.
It's as good as any.
It's up to you. Bring me a salsa, will you?
Vince points to the stage.
Can those guys play with me when I sing?
Sing? What do you mean, sing?
Sing. You said I could start tonight.
This barboy. Make setups, bring ice.
Well, Hunk told me you'd give me a job singing.
Look, what do you think I am, a mental case? This place is no hobby, you know.
All I want is a chance, Mr. Brewster.
Look, kid, I'll save you some grief. So, Hunk taught you a couple of songs. Swell. Be the life of the next party you go to. But we don't have opportunity night here.
Vince imitates Brewster's snooty sneer.
Now, do you want the job or don't you? Barboy.
Brewster nods at Peggy.
I'll see you around, honey.
Vince watches Brewster walk away, then faces Peggy.
Hunk Houghton. That name sounds familiar.
He's an old country music singer. I met him in the penitentiary. Make sit-ups and bring eyes.
Vince's eyes shift to the stage. He leans his smooth face close to Peggy as he gets off his stool. Grabbing his guitar, Vince trots onto the stage behind the bar.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a part of this show, so just don't encourage me or pay me any mind at all. The man that owns this place, he thinks I can't sing, so I gotta prove it to him. So you just go ahead, whatever you do, and it won't take long.
He turns to the band.
It's to a chorus of Young and Beautiful.
You're so young and beautiful, and I love.
In a booth, a stocky man whispers into a young woman's ear. They both grin.
Your lips so red, your eyes that shine.
Shame. Rooster smiles at Vince, then frowns at the obnoxious patron. Vince glares.
So don't let me interrupt you, mister.
I won't.
So fill these lonely arms of mine.
Vince looks at Peggy, whose captivated eyes stare at him under her arched brows.
Then you'll be forever young and beautiful to me.
Vince takes his guitar strap off his shoulder and mocks the patron's laugh. He jumps off the stage and smashes his guitar on the man's table. As the patron and his date cower, Vince storms out. Peggy runs after him.
Hey! You forgot something!
What?
Me! That was quite a temper tantrum back there.
That creep had it coming.
Look, why don't you get me off the streets, huh? I'm bushed.
She points behind her.
She'll do 80 on a straightaway.
Vince stares at her. Peggy takes his hand.
Come on, huh? Come on.
She tugs on his sleeve and he follows her to a convertible.
Do you always bust guitars on talking customers?
I wasn't that bad.
Oh?
They slide into the front seat.
You think so?
Well, I didn't think you were very good, Vince.
Well, after listening to Mickey Alba all day...
All right. You tell me. Why didn't they listen to you?
I don't know. I'm no worse than a lot of them.
And no better.
Okay, you're used to the top talent. What are you wasting your time working me over for?
I like the way you swing a guitar.
I guess I did get a lot of wrist action into it, didn't I? Well, that's all she wrote. My musical career started and ended with one song.
I don't know why. Not until you've given yourself every chance.
Well, if they won't listen to me, I can't hold a gun on them.
Did you ever listen to yourself?
I can listen to myself when I'm singing.
Make a tape recording. Maybe when you hear yourself, you can discover what's wrong.
Sounds like a good idea. How much does it cost?
About $20 with a recording studio, I think.
I haven't got a guitar.
I'll borrow one for you.
Can't hurt anything.
Now, Vince paces in a recording studio. He looks through a large window to a control booth where two engineers read papers and a third pours coffee. Peggy rushes into the studio with four musicians.
I'm sorry I'm late, Vince.
You just don't pay no attention to my nerve.
I brought you some background.
Yeah? Who's gonna pay him?
It's on the house. Have you picked a tune?
Yeah. Sit down, fellas.
Vince sits on a stool with his guitar as the musicians take their places.
Let's see if you know this one.
Don't leave me now.
The musicians all nod, and Vince turns to the control booth.
Okay, I'm good as I'll ever be.
One engineer flips a switch.
Stand by, please. Everett, demonstration number one, take one.
One, two, three.
Don't leave me now. How blue if you should say we're through.
Later, Vince, Peggy, and the musicians listen to the recording.
Don't break my heart. This heart that loves you.
Man, that's awful.
That just be.
Do I sound like that?
He looks over his shoulder at the control booth where the engineers have a coffee break. Vince steps over to Peggy with his arms crossed.
I guess I owe that guy to Florida a couple of drinks.
It's a nice tune, though.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the tune. It's just the way I'm doing it.
How do you mean?
It sounds like a million other things.
Well, then sing it differently.
Like how?
Like how you feel it. Put your own emotions into the song. Make it fit you.
Make it fit you. Well, the first thing is that guitar, it's tough trying to find the chords. I just want to use it.
Nobody cares.
Okay, fellas, let's do it again.
Okay. Good.
Vince sits on the stool, and the musicians take their places.
Burn me up this time. Let's see if we can get a little fire in.
He faces the control booth.
Try it again, sir.
All right, stand by. Everett, demonstration number 2, take 1.
Vince points to the piano player.
Don't leave me now.
Don't leave me now.
Now that I need you. How blue and lonely I'd be if you should say we're through.
Don't say we're through.
Don't break my heart.
Vince stands and sways his hips.
My heart.
Should leave me now.
Later, Vince snaps his fingers as he listens to the recording.
What good is dreaming if I must dream all alone?
As the musicians sway, the engineers smile. One waves to Vince.
Without you, darling, my arms would just get.
What do you think?
I think it's wonderful, Vince.
Think it's good enough for a record?
It sure is.
Well, then let's go ahead.
With a record?
Why not? How do you go about it?
Well, it isn't that easy, Vince. I mean, you have to go to a record company and sell them on the idea.
Well, then let's do it. You know the business, and I want to cash in on some of that loot.
Well, I don't know. We might try Geneva Records.
What can they do? Send me back to the pen.
Later in an office, Peggy, Vince, and a smartly dressed executive listen to the demo reel.
Oh, don't you leave me now.
Don't leave me now.
Thanks, Peg, for letting me hear it.
I think he's got a very distinctive style.
Everybody's got a distinctive style these days. I'd like to hear someone sing a song straight for a change.
But you know they're going for the new sounds, Jack.
Oh, I wish I could help you with it, Peg. Do you know our program this year? No experiments. We're sticking with the established record sellers.
Well, I guess we'll have to let MGM Records have it.
Well, I wish you luck.
Thanks anyway, Jack.
Let's get out of here.
They head for the door.
I tell you what, Peg. Why don't you leave the tape with me overnight? I'll play it over the phone to DL in New York. That's the best I can do for you.
Oh, that'd be wonderful, Jack. Thank you.
I don't promise you anything. It's nice to meet you, Sonny.
Likewise, sir.
Jack shakes Vince's hand. Vince spots his quarter-size cufflinks.
The sharp cufflinks. I'm gonna have me sound like that someday.
Mickey Elba made me a present of these when we gave him his 8th gold record. Maybe someday you'll make me the same kind of present.
It'd be nice.
Goodbye, Jack.
Bye, Peg.
Vince and Peggy leave. Later, Vince sits in his hotel room reading his prison fan mail. He answers an old-fashioned wall phone.
Hello?
Hello, Vince. I'm afraid I have bad news.
You saw Lee's, huh?
He said the man in New York didn't like the tape.
Well, what do we do now?
Keep on trying other labels, I guess.
Okay, you do that.
I'll meet you at that same restaurant. About 7, huh?
Okay. Bye.
Vince scratches his head. Later at the restaurant, Peggy sits alone in a semicircular booth. Vince joins her.
Hi.
You've kept me waiting 20 minutes.
I've been sleeping. You ate yet?
Certainly not. Vince, don't you know the meaning of the word courtesy?
No, we don't use it much in the backwoods. Let's eat.
You might at least ask me what happened this afternoon.
What happened this afternoon?
I sold your record, that's all.
Swell. I could tear into a good steak.
Would it hurt you just to say that you're happy about it?
Well, it wouldn't be easy. When the money starts rolling in, then I'll say I'm happy.
As Vince looks at his menu, Peggy glares. She takes a deep breath and picks up her menu.
Who'd you make the deal with?
Deltona.
Never heard of it.
It's fairly new. They're crazy about it, Vince. They say they're going to push it real hard.
Great.
Let's celebrate, huh, Vince? We'll have a bottle of wine and a nice meal, and then after dinner, we'll drive out and see my father and mother.
I know you had a father and mother.
Well, he didn't win me on a quiz show. You like Burgundy? Goes great with steak.
I like anything that goes with steak. I'm broke.
Well, if it's all right with you, I'll pay for the meal.
You will if we eat. Hey, waitress.
Later, Peggy drives Vince to her parents' suburban home. As Vince heads up the front walk between neatly trimmed hedges, Peggy gets out of the car, opening the door herself. Wall-mounted lanterns glow on each side of the house's stately front door.
It's real crazy, Pat. What does your old man do for a living?
He's a professor at Bertrand College.
Oh?
Inside, a dozen well-dressed guests chat and enjoy cocktails. A balding man spots Peggy.
Peggy! Hello, darling.
Hello, Daddy. I'd like you to meet my friend, Vince Everett.
Welcome, young man. Mother, this is Mr. Everett, the young singer Peggy's been working with.
How do you do?
Can I fix you people a drink?
No, thank you, Daddy. Not right now.
Scotch? Bourbon?
You got any beer?
Coming up.
We're very pleased to see you, Mr. Everett. Peggy's told us about you.
She hasn't told me anything about you.
I hear you sold your first record today.
Vince glances at Peggy.
You seem to hear everything about me, huh?
How long have you been in the music business, Mr. Everett?
About a week.
I see. There you are, sir. And what did you do before that?
Peggy didn't tell you?
No.
Mr. Everett was in the penitentiary.
Oh, is that so? What was the rap?
1 to 10. I did 14 months.
August, why don't you put on that new record by Stubby Reitmeyer? After all, I'm sure Mr. Everett's interested in jazz music. It's his profession.
Righto.
Will you excuse me? I have to fix the sandwiches.
That bomb kind of laid an egg, didn't it?
What bomb?
About the penitentiary. I'm afraid the shock value isn't worth very much.
As Peggy and Vince sit on a cushioned window seat, Peggy's father puts on a record. Nearby, several guests listen.
I think Stubby's gone overboard with those altered chords, don't you?
I agree. I think Brubeck and Desmond have gone just as far with dissonance as I care to go.
Oh, nonsense. Have you heard Lenny Tristano's latest recording? He reached outer space.
Someday they'll make the cycle and get back to pure old Dixieland. I say atonality is just a passing phase in jazz music. What do you think, Mr. Everett?
The group looks at Vince.
Lady, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
As Vince gets up and strides out, the guests stare. Peggy runs after him. As he walks outside, slamming the door behind him, Peggy follows.
Vince!
She runs down the sidewalk, grabs his arm, and spins him around to face her.
Well, you finally got your sensation. I hope you're satisfied.
Get on my back, kid. I ain't in a mood.
You insulted my father, my mother, and me, and it's just unforgivable.
What do you expect? I come out, have a little beer. First thing I know, some old broads push me in a corner with some stupid question.
They were just trying to bring you into the conversation.
I could show their conversation. I'm not even sure they were talking English.
I'll drive you back to your hotel.
I'll walk.
He turns away.
I think I'm going to just hate you.
Vince steps toward her, shaking his head.
You ain't going to hate me. I ain't going to let you hate me.
He grabs her and kisses her forcefully. She clenches his shoulder and pushes him away.
How dare you think such cheap tactics would work with me?
He grabs her and kisses her again. As they release, Peggy glares, her lipstick smeared across her cheek. Vince eyes her under his heavy lids.
That ain't tactics, honey. It's just the beast in me.
Frowning, Peggy watches Vince leave. Her chin drops, then lifts. Peggy's face grows determined. Daytime. On a city street, Vince and Peggy get out of the convertible.
Peggy, before we go in, there's something I'd better say. About the other night, I guess I did get out of line a foot or two. I got a pretty big mouth sometimes. So if you'll just tell your old lady that I said I'm...
Sorry.
Yeah.
He takes her arm and they enter a record store. They approach a teenage girl at the counter.
May I help you? Today's the release date for Don't Leave Me Now. Do you have it?
We sure do. The kids in the store are all crazy about it. It's the greatest.
I think I'll take about a half a dozen.
Yes, sir. Did you hear that? They're crazy about it.
I'm going to start off with a red one.
A red what?
Convertible.
That'll be $6 plus tax.
Peggy frowns.
May I see those records, please?
With a furrowed brow, Peggy flips through the handful of 45s.
What's the matter, Peggy?
Vince takes one of the records and reads the cover.
Don't Leave Me Now by Mickey Alba. Geneva Record Company. I'm afraid I don't get it.
I do. Which booth can we use?
Any of them.
Vince follows Peggy into a glass-enclosed listening booth. Peggy angrily sets one of the records on a turntable.
Of all the low and filthy...
Peggy, tell me what's going on.
Shh.
Don't leave me now.
Don't leave me now.
Now that I need you. How blue and lonely...
What a lousy thief. He stole my style, my arrangement, my everything.
At least copied your tape and gave it to him.
What about my record?
You can forget it. It's gone.
Peggy storms out of the booth.
Miss.
I'll see you later.
Vince.
I'll see you later, Peg.
Vince runs out of the store.
Vince, where are you going?
Now at Geneva Records.
You don't own that song. It's a published tune. Anyone can record it.
You turned it down. You said you didn't like it.
We simply didn't want to record it with an unknown.
What about my arrangement?
So see your lawyer. You can't copyright an arrangement.
You're a thieving rat.
Now you listen to me, sonny.
Don't honey me, you rat.
Vince slaps him.
Throw back onto your rock, you snake.
Vince pushes the executive, Jack, into his chair and storms out. Later, he lies on his hotel room bed.
Come in.
As Peggy enters, Vince stares straight ahead. Peggy tosses her jacket on a chair, then sits next to Vince on the bed. She gazes earnestly into his eyes.
What did you do to him?
Nothing. Just slapped him a couple of times.
Isn't that dangerous? I mean, he might have you arrested or something.
Well, why are you scared? It's not you.
I just don't want anything to happen to you, that's all.
She leans in close.
I'm terribly sorry, Vince.
Old Honk Houghton told me once back in the pen. He said, watch out for the teeth, sonny. It's a jungle. Yeah, he had it taped. On the inside, they're Cub Scouts compared to Jack Lees. If you make something, they might steal it from you. But they'd be too honorable to go around saying they made it themselves.
Yeah, it was a pretty rotten thing.
Well, now the crying's over. I want to make another record.
Same thing might happen all over again.
You got no guts, Peggy. So if they steal from you, there's only one thing to do. Start your own record company.
Your own company?
Certainly. What's the mystery? We can find out the details from a lawyer or something. Well, you don't have to own a factory. I found that out. You contract for the pressings.
But you just don't go out and start your own record company just like that.
Well, why not? It's done every day. We're just as smart as those other birds. Look, I make the decisions now. I can't louse things up any worse than you did.
Vince goes to the window and gazes out. Peggy looks at him thoughtfully.
Distribution. Well, I know a little bit about it.
Sure you do. And exploitation? That's your racket. Look, we'll be partners. We'll split things up 60-40, huh?
60-40?
Well, I'm the artist, don't forget. Are you with me?
Vince extends his hand. Peggy looks at it, then cracks a grin.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I am. Well, I'll quit my job tomorrow.
Vince paces dreamily.
My own record company. Smell of money already.
He flops onto the bed. Peggy stretches out next to him.
Well, this really calls for a celebration, doesn't it, Vince?
Do you know a lawyer?
Do you know how to dance?
We'll need a good one. A guy with an eye to a buck. Do you know a lawyer?
Yeah, I know a lawyer. Mr. Shores. But he's a cold-blooded old fish.
Good. How's he fixed financially?
Well, they say he's got the first dollar he ever earned.
Sounds like my man. Interested only in money.
Is that all you're interested in, Vince?
What else?
Nothing.
Hey, when can we see this Mr. Shores?
Tonight, if you want to.
Good.
Peggy stares off blankly. Later, they meet with a balding man.
And incorporation papers will cost you $100.
We'll raise it. What else?
Registering your trademark, $25.
Mr. Shores, are you interested in show business?
Not in the slightest.
Well, how would you like to be my manager?
I should want to first ascertain what your earning potential will be.
We're real kinfolks, Mr. Shores. Now, Peggy and I are going to earn some money, and when we do, we'll make another record, then we'll be in business.
Mm-hmm.
You know something? Mm-hmm. I'm going to make you rich.
I'm already rich.
You'll be richer. Good night.
Thank you, Mr. Shores.
You're welcome.
In the recording studio.
You got it? Okay, we're ready.
Stand by, please. What's this new label of yours?
Laurel Records.
Laurel, number 101, take one.
Vince steps up to the mic.
Walk through the door, baby, be polite. You're gonna make me sore if you don't greet me right. Don't you ever kiss me once or kiss me twice. Treat me nice. I know that you've been told it's not fair to tease. So if you come on cold, I'm really gonna freeze. If you don't want me to be cold as ice, treat me nice. Make me feel at home if you really care. Scratch my back and run your pretty fingers through my hair. You know I'd be your slave if you ask me to. But if you don't behave, I walk right out on you. If you want my love, then take my advice. Oh, treat me nice. Make me feel at home if you really care. Scratch my back and run your pretty fingers through my hair. You would nobody be your slave if you ask me to. But if you don't behave, I'll walk right out on you. If you want my love, then take my advice. Treat me nice. Treat me nice.
Now in a packing room, Peggy counts out record singles as Vince boxes them. On the sleeve, a photo shows the singer and the words, "Vince Everett, treat me nice." Later, Peggy and Vince ride in the convertible. In a record shop, Peggy shows a clerk the single. He shakes his head. Back in the convertible, Vince sulks as Peggy talks. In a radio station, Peggy meets with a DJ. The scene fades to a roadmap, then to Peggy waiting outside a door marked Studio A. A lean-faced man exits.
Hi, Ted.
Oh, hi, darling. What's this I hear about you quitting Alba and becoming a recording tycoon?
That's right. Here's my first offering.
Treat me nice, Vince Everett. How is it?
Good enough to make me quit my job.
And, want me to give it a couple of shots?
Oh, if you only would, Teddy. It would mean so much to us.
Well, we'll try it. See how the cookie crumbles.
Thanks.
Peg, how long are you going to be in town?
Well, about a day or two.
Well, suppose we get together and split a herring.
I'd like that.
Good.
As he walks off, Peggy smiles. Her eyebrows lift in delight. Later in a DJ booth, Teddy spins the record as he reads from a sheet of copy.
When I walk through...
Folks, does your dog turn up his nose at the same old canned dog foods and dried preparations? Then why don't you try fresh meat? Size Pet Shop will deliver fresh, red, juicy horse meat wrapped in the size package you demand right to your door. It only costs pennies more, but the treat for your dog will be worth dollars in health and vigor. Remember, Size Pet Shop, telephone Mammoth 62480. That's Mammoth 62480.
He puts down the ad. Later.
Friends, I owe our listeners an apology. So many calls have come in complaining they couldn't hear all of the new Vince Everett record because of the commercial. They were going to play it again. We're doing it for Betty, Mary Jo, Linda, Julie, the gang down at Ray's Auto Upholstery, and, well, the list is too long. Apparently, just about everybody wants to hear this new platter. So here he is, Vince Everett singing Treat Me Nice on the new Laurel label.
When I walk through the door, baby, be polite. You're gonna make me sore.
At a record store, Vince autographs copies surrounded by teenage fans. Mr. Shore sidles up to him through the crowd.
Treat me nice.
Sure.
They shake hands.
I now have confidence in your earning potential, Mr. Everett.
Good deal. You're in.
10% of the record company and 5% of your earnings.
9% of the company, Mr. Shores. That leaves me 51% and controlling interest.
Agreed.
And 4% on my personal take.
I have the papers already prepared.
With those figures?
I anticipated you, Mr. Everett.
Peggy watches the lawyer go.
How do you like that? Smelled the money from 400 miles away.
I think I got it made.
Vince resumes autographs and his fans close in. Later, Peggy answers her apartment door wearing a spaghetti strap cocktail dress.
Vince, come on in.
I just checked the record shop, kid. We sold 425 copies.
That's great.
We got a hit. You stick with me, and like they say, I'll put diamonds in your teeth.
Oh, that's nice.
How do you like the cufflinks? Dollar down, dollar a week.
What do you intend doing with them? Use them for a landing strip?
It's the mark of a man's success.
Peggy primps her hair at a mirror. Vince adjusts his cufflinks and eyes Peggy's bare shoulders. He reaches around her slim waist.
You look sexy tonight. Start the hammers to pounding in my skull.
He pulls her close, then turns her around to face him. They kiss passionately. As he holds her tightly, he strokes her back. Her fingers grip his shoulder. They pull slowly out of the kiss, and Vince gazes at Peggy.
You must have read my mind when you wore this dress.
What's on your little mind?
A celebration. Tonight's the night for a real celebration.
I like the idea.
We'll send up rockets.
But not with you.
Soft music, loud champagne. We'll charge it to all records. Not with me.
No, not tonight.
Who with?
I have a date with Teddy Talbot.
That record spinner? You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. That record spinner that made a hit for you.
But I've already got reservations at the local night spot and everything.
Vince, you should have made reservations with me. I still have a life of my own, you know.
I thought this is one night you wouldn't let me down.
Vince, I don't understand why you're so upset. You told me yourself. I asked you if money was all you were interested in, and your answer was, and I quote, what else?
That was different.
Was it? Vince, I will not be subject to your beck and call. Excuse me.
As Peggy answers the door, Vince sulks. Teddy greets Peggy in a suit.
Hi, Ted.
You do look scrumptious.
Thank you. Be right with you.
Okay.
Teddy walks over to Vince.
Hi, Vince.
What do you say?
Seeing much of our little metropolis?
Well, I've seen enough.
Did you thank the man for all the help he's given us?
Oh, it's not necessary.
Thank the man, Vincent.
Vince offers his hand.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Teddy follows Peggy to the door.
Good night, Vince.
They leave.
Good night, Vince.
Vince paces with one hand in his pocket and his head hanging. He mopes over to a sofa, flops onto it, and stares up at the ceiling. Now, Mr. Shores talks into a handheld microphone.
After the success of his initial record, Mr. Everett was unable to command more advantageous contracts. I was told the adolescents found Mr. Everett's unique style of singing quite titillating. Our expenses, however, increased with gross income. I found transportation costs to be particularly high. This, however, was a deductible item. Oh, his choice of color was white.
At a car dealer, Vince drives off in a new convertible. Later, in a chic apartment, guests dance and drink.
I doubted I could convince the Internal Revenue Department that all of Mr. Everett's entertaining was for business purposes only. On the other hand, my client felt extremely elated over his latest good fortune. He'd been invited by the National Broadcasting Company to participate in a nationwide television extravaganza.
Vince brings a drink to a shapely blonde. Peggy arrives and sees him kiss the blonde's neck. Vince notices Peggy watching him sternly from the front door.
Hi, Pod.
He strides across the chic, spacious room and greets Peggy.
How are you?
He pulls her close, kissing her cheek. Peggy stands stiffly, leaving her arms at her sides.
I guess you heard the news about the TV show.
Yes, Mr. Shaw has told me.
Come on. I want to introduce you to a new member of the troupe.
He leads Peggy over to the blonde.
Laura Jackson, this is Peggy Van Alden.
Pleased to make your acquaintance, ma'am.
How do you do?
Laura is a real cool little singer. I'm taking her to New York with me.
Oh? In that case, I don't think I'll go.
Huh? Are you planning to go? What for?
No reason I can think of now.
Got nothing to do with the record business.
Of course not.
It's just like you said that night in Joplin. You and me, it's strictly business.
Let's keep it that way.
She turns to go, then eyes him over her shoulder.
Let me know when you want to cut another record. Hard.
As she reaches the front door, Vince keeps his gaze on her.
Peggy?
She pauses at the open door and Vince goes to her. He puts one hand in his pocket. They stand face to face.
Okay, I'll see you. Gonna wish me luck?
Peggy's gaze softens.
Luck.
Where's my Vince boy?
Vince opens the door.
Hi, son.
It's Hunk.
Remember me?
They shake hands.
Hunk, you old son of a gun. How are you?
You must be Peggy Van Alden, the gal that started the record company with Vince.
How do you do?
I'm the bird got Vince started, right, Vince?
You better believe it. Hey, how'd you know about the record company?
Oh, I gotta keep up with the activities of my partner.
You've got more partners than a square dance.
Yep. I taught the boy plenty.
We'll find out just how well you taught him. Good night.
Peggy walks off.
That's a pretty little thing. Well, boy, I'm raring to go.
Vince strokes Hunk's plaid jacket.
How you like it? 30 cartons of cigarettes.
Cigarettes? You old stud, how about a drink?
Sing it to me in the key of G.
Folks, meet Hunk Houghton, the toughest old con in cell block 21.
Howdy. How you doing? Pleased to meet you.
How about that drink now?
Well, you can call me a gourd full.
Vince walks to a bar and picks a bottle.
Uncle Matthew bonded bourbon. You know how old this bourbon is?
How old?
12 years old.
Heavens above.
Vince pours him a glass. Hunk takes a sip, then shuts his eyes.
Oh, that's like an angel dancing over the tip of your tongue. It seems a shame to even digest this bourbon. Well, you made it, huh, boy? I've been reading about it, and I feel proud of you.
Yeah, I've been lucky so far.
Lucky? Talent. I knew you had it the minute you opened up your mouth. Now you're going on the TV.
You know everything, don't you?
I feel good. Well, what's your plans for me, boy?
Vince's eyes drop.
Well, I ain't exactly got any, Hunk.
You got no plans for Hunk, your old partner?
Well, what do you want to do?
I want a spot in that TV show.
You're talking crazy, Hunk. You better think it over.
I've been thinking about it for 18 years.
Yeah, I know, but times have changed and styles have changed. You might fall flat on your face, boy.
I might get lucky like you, too.
I tried your style. Just like you taught me, boy, I laid a bomb.
But you ain't me. Look, boy, all I need is one good break, and you can get it for me in that TV show.
Well, I guess I owe you that much. But I don't know how it's going to work out, Hunk.
Oh, you let me worry about that. You're a good boy.
Later on the TV show, Vince stands at a mic.
Ladies and gentlemen, a little while back, I had a kind of a vacation with a bunch of men in a big place away out yonder, and while I was there, these men,
kind of guest, you might say. Well, we'd get together and horse around a little bit and sing, and because we were having such a good time. And, well, we always had a lot of fun with this one. The Jailhouse Rock.
On a soundstage, cameras move toward 16 men dressed in denim, like convicts. They stand on a two-level set that resembles a prison cell block, and they wrap tin cups against the bars.
One threw a party in the county jail. The prison band was there, they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard you knocked out jailbird sing that rock.
Vince slides down a pole to the floor.
Everybody let it rock.
Vince swivels his hips.
Everybody in a wholesale block was dancing to the jailhouse rock. Spider-Man played it in a saxophone. Little Joe was blowing on the slide trombone. The drummer for the middle boy was crash boom bang. The whole rhythm section was a purple gang. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. I sure would be delighted with your company. Come on and do the jailhouse rock with me. Let rock.
Go, go, go!
A skinny prisoner and a fat prisoner slide palms with another, then try jiggling their hips like Vince. Now at a table, two dancers each hold a long bench at an angle while two others leapfrog over their heads and slide down. The other dancers surround the table, and Vince dances on top, swinging his hips.
Sad Sack was sitting on a block of stone, way over in the corner, weeping all alone. The warden said, hey, buddy, don't you be no square. If you can't find a partner, use a wooden chair.
Rock, rock, rock.
Everybody, let's rock.
Rock, rock.
Everybody in the wholesale block was dancing to the jail out of rock. Shifter Henry said the bugs for heaven's sake. No one's looking at a chance to make a break. Bugsy turned the shifter and he said, nix, nix. I wanna stick around, I wanna get my kick.
Two men sneak forward on tiptoe. A guard swinging a nightstick stops them and crowns one, who pretends to drop unconscious. Then the guard dances. Snapping his fingers and swaying to the beat, Vince leads half the group up a spiral staircase to the upper level of the cell block set. Some of the men strut into the open jail doors and bang their tin cups. As the guard waves his nightstick to the beat, four guys sit with their legs dangling off the upper platform. They all run behind the bars and pull the cell doors shut. Now in the production booth.
Thank you, Mr. Everett. Very good, Jack, but a couple of your dancers missed their marks and we lost them.
Vince and the others leave the set.
All right, we'll go right into the hillbilly number.
What's his name? Houseman?
Hunk Houghton.
Hunk stands with some musicians.
All right, Mr. Houghton.
Okay, cut to four. Dolly in and hold.
I'm up in the morning with the rising sun. I work like a slave till the day is done.
In the booth, an executive frowns.
Where'd he come from?
Some pal of Everett's.
Say, what is this?
Don't blame me, Mr. Bottom, and it wasn't my idea. He came as part of the Everett deal.
I'm sorry, deal or no deal, he's off the show.
Okay, Mr. Bottom, Everett might bellyache.
Compared to the sponsor's pain, his would be nothing. I wonder what he ever did for Everett.
Freddie, we're way over length. We're going to have to trim about 4 minutes. Tell you what, we'll go right from the jailhouse rock to the film clip. Cut the hillbilly number.
Hunk gapes. Later in Vince's living room, Hunk sits slumped in a chair with a drink in his hand. Vince throws down a paper.
I get calls and wires from all over the world, but not little Peggy. No, not little Peg. I'll bet she didn't even tune me in tonight.
As Hunk walks to a cart and refills his glass, Vince puts his hand on the phone.
Okay, baby. You wait for me to call you? Well, it'll be a cold day and... Yeah, that's what it'll be.
Vince walks over to Hunk at the liquor cart.
That ain't gonna help.
It always has.
I warned you, but you wouldn't listen.
Don't rub it in.
And don't ask for pity. You told me that.
Don't worry about me, sonny. I'll get along.
How? One flop in a man's whole life. How'd you expect me to follow that three-ring circus you put on?
You couldn't have followed a juggler.
Naturally. I haven't got your talent.
That's right, you haven't. So what are you going to do?
I don't see where that's any of your business.
Now, look, Hunk. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to put the brakes on my career now. I don't want you as part of my troupe. You're not good enough.
Hunk turns his frown on Vince, who shifts on his feet.
It's been a long time, Hunk. Music changes every 6 months. You got to change with it.
Hunk looks away, then paces with his back to Vince.
I was in show business when you were running around in wet pants, and I'll be in it when they can't even remember your name.
Fine, but not with me.
Don't you forgetting something, Sonny?
I was wondering when you'd bring it up.
Right down the middle, 50-50. It's a legal contract.
I put Mr. Shores on that contract. It's not worth the ink it took to write it. You should have checked with a lawyer, Dad.
Hunk fingers his glass and stares off heavily.
Well, I figured it was a contract in good faith more than how legal it was.
Is that what you figured, Hunk? Is that what you figured? Even after the fan mail you knew about that I got in the can?
A contract is a contract.
Let's level, huh? Okay, you did me a favor. You started me out in music, and then you tried to rob me.
Hunk casts his gaze downward.
But I ain't forgetting about the whipping that you tried to buy me out of. So I'm going to honor that contract, providing I don't hear any more of that jazz about good faith. I'm going to honor it, Hunk. But not for no 50%.
How much?
10. I wonder if Shorty checked those airline reservations. Will you find out for me?
10%, huh?
10.
You know, a punk like you is liable to get lucky enough to make $1 million a year.
That's just what I intend to do.
And 10% of a million is 100,000.
There you go. You were always good at arithmetic.
You're going to have the most expensive flunky in show business.
Now we see Las Vegas marquees and beach resorts.
After the television show, the floodgates opened wide. We had engagements in all the best-paying recreation centers in America. Receipts doubled and redoubled. Our tax situation became acute. The record business was neglected during this phase, much to my regret.
Mr. Shores talks into
his
mic.
My hands were tied. There seemed to be emotional difficulties between the two principal stockholders. The 40% participant refused to telephone the 60% partner. It was an impasse, and highly unbusinesslike. Finally, there was only one phase of the entertainment industry left.
So a sign reads Hollywood Boulevard.
We signed a non-exclusive contract with Climax Studios.
Vince meets with three executives.
We welcome you, Vince, with all our hearts. Now, you may find Hollywood to be a lonely town. You're new here, and good friends are hard to find, just as in any other industry. And I want you to know that you may feel free to regard my home as your own. Come to me anytime.
He reaches for the intercom.
Yes?
The photographer's here.
Oh, please send them in. We want to get your publicity campaign started right away, so we're having a studio photographer come in.
As the door opens, Vince does a double take at a shapely blonde in a tight halter dress. A man follows her, carrying a bulky camera.
Mr. Everett, meet Miss Sherry Wilson, your leading lady.
How do you do?
We thought some photographs together.
Sure.
You're fine. You just step in there. Thank you very much, and we'll get a beautiful picture here. Now, smile pretty. Oh, that's fine. Now, maybe an action shot, like you just signed your contract and you're shaking hands. All right? Smile pretty now.
Vince stares at her cleavage.
And now we have a little chore for you two young people. We want you to be seen together.
Well, I'm not doing a thing for the next couple of days and nights.
And Sherry, remember that old cooperation, dear.
Of course.
She eyes Vince.
A job's a job.
Well, you'll find that girl on you.
Now at Knott's Berry Farm, Vince pans for gold. Beside him, Sherry sighs disdainfully, wearing a glittery sheep dress. At a shooting gallery, Vince aims as Sherry leans on the countertop with a glazed look on her face. Later, Vince and Sherry wear cowboy hats side by side on a wagon. Sherry impatiently adjusts Vince's hat, and a photographer waves to them. At a dusty drag strip, Vince and Sherry watch hot rods on a straightaway. One car speeds across the finish line. Sherry balks wearing a fancy off-the-shoulder dress.
Who's gonna see us here?
Got my eye on you every minute.
Sherry glares. At a food stand, they eat hamburgers.
I thought we'd have lunch at Romanoff's.
You can only eat so much, you know.
Now on a sightseeing bus.
Next, on your left, across the street, you will see the mansion of Jack Benny.
As Vince smiles, Sherry grimaces.
Oh, brother.
Sensational, huh?
It's a smash.
She stares ahead with a stony gaze. Later, Vince's convertible pulls up in front of Sherry's apartment building. He pulls his handbrake, and Sherry gets out.
Don't bother seeing me to the door.
I could make it.
I asked for nothing, I expected nothing, and I got nothing.
What'd you expect for nothing?
As she enters the building, Vince drives off. Later, he strides onto a movie set. Behind him, Hunk walks two basset hounds on a leash.
Okay, everybody, let's get this show on the road. Let's go.
Vince disappears into a dressing room, and Hunk follows with the dogs. On the set, Sherry turns to the director.
Mr. Drummond, do we have to do the love scene the very first shot?
Oh, we can't change the schedule now, Sherry.
I wanted to sort of work myself up to it. Making love to that Rube won't be easy.
Oh, you'll be fine, dear. You're a trooper.
Let's rehearse it. On the set, everybody.
Later, Drummond directs.
The situation is a simple one. Vince, you've just come home. You've got this great news about your promotion. But your wife is lying on the couch with a bad headache. You're bursting with happiness as you come in. But when you see she isn't feeling well, you're concerned for her. You kiss her tenderly, and then tell her. Got it?
Got it.
Let's run through it.
Sherry and Vince take their places.
Quiet on the set!
Sherry reclines on the sofa, her hand to her forehead. Vince waits off camera.
All right, Vince. Come in.
Hey, honey. Guess what? I finally got the promotion. What's the matter?
I guess it's one of those miserable headaches again.
You take any aspirin?
It doesn't seem to do any good.
Let me rub your temples.
He strokes her temples with his fingertips and leans in close. Drummond looks on from his director's chair.
Good. Now kiss her.
He moves in quickly.
Gently!
Vince backs softly off, then locks her in a heavy, passionate kiss. Sherry reaches up and pulls him closer. Drummond grimaces.
No, Vince, let's try it again.
They keep kissing.
Vince!
The entire production crew stands frozen and stares at the pair on the couch. Meanwhile, Vince pulls slowly out of the kiss. Sherry lies still.
How's your headache?
I'm getting all unglued.
He kisses her again. Drummond leans forward.
Vince!
Vince waves him off. Later, by an in-ground pool, they sit in bathing suits.
You know how to float?
No.
Come on, I'll teach you. Come on.
In the water, Vince holds his arms under her back.
There you go. Lay your head back. Move your arms. Kick your feet. There you go. Okay, you're on your own.
As he lets go, Sherry sinks a little. She wraps her arms around Vince. They kiss. All around them, light glimmers on the rippling water.
I want to throw a party.
For what?
To celebrate.
They swim off. Daytime. Vince stands in a pullover, pressed slacks and two-toned shoes. Behind him in a poolside cabana, his backup musicians wear Hawaiian shirts. An audience of sunbathers watch as he wiggles his leg to the beat.
You don't like crazy music. You don't like rocking bands. You just want to go to a movie show and sit there holding hands. You are so square. Baby, I don't care. You don't like a hot rod racing. Driving late at night. You just want to park where it's nice and dark. You just want to hold me tight. You're so square. Oh, baby, I don't care. You don't know any dance steps that I knew. No one else can love me like you do, 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 do. I don't know why my heart flips. I only know it does. I wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you so square.
Sherry grins.
Baby, I don't care. Baby, I don't care. Baby, I don't care. Baby, I don't care.
Vince wiggles his shoulders and pelvis, then shifts his weight from side to side as he snaps his fingers. His mouth curls in a one-sided grin, and he slings his hips left and right.
I don't know why my heart flips, I only know it does. I wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you're so square. Baby, I don't care. Baby, I don't care. Baby, I don't care.
Vince stands in place, shimmying. Nearby, Hunk watches from a lounge chair. Vince's basset hounds sit at his feet. A girl in a bathing suit looks at Vince adoringly.
Gee, Vince, when you sing, it's really Gunsville.
All for you, honey.
Bye.
He shakes her hand, then faces Hunk.
I see you applauding. You didn't like me?
You come a long way since Cell Block 21.
Yeah, and it's been a tough road to hoe.
Oh, I don't know. You hardly haven't touched the ground at all.
What do you mean by that crack?
You walk most of the way on other people.
Ah, you're just getting bitter, old buddy.
Sherry approaches.
Doll, where have you been?
Right in your little heart, doll.
You didn't say a thing about my outfit.
He eyes her tight pants and top.
Flippy. Real flippy.
He presses his lips to her neck. As Vince blinks over her shoulder, he spots a lady's feet in open-toe shoes. His eyes travel up the woman's full skirt to her fitted bodice.
Peggy.
He walks over to her, then hugs her. Peggy closes her eyes as Vince strokes her back.
I thought you'd never come back, Peg.
Every time I see you, you're working a neck.
I just been waiting and wondering if you missed me like I missed you.
There was always the telephone, Vince. It would have been nice if you'd called.
I've been up to my ears in work, Peg. No fooling.
I understand. The real reason I came was about the record company. Isn't it about time you cut a few sides?
Records? Is that why you came back?
Nobody gets so big that they can ignore the records, Vince. Not even you.
Sure. I'll make records. You set up a date, huh? Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll see that my guests are happy.
As Vince walks off, Hunk joins Peggy.
How do you like our movie star, Peggy?
He has adapted very quickly.
Well, there's not much oxygen up where he is, and a man gets lightheaded.
Peggy purses her lips.
Most actors, when they become stars, go through a brief period of being modest.
Not our boy. He became a heel overnight. What are you doing here today, Peg?
I guess I like punishment.
Well, you don't have to take it, you know.
I'll learn.
Sure. You're too smart a gal to let him cut you up.
Sure I am.
Where's Mr. Everett?
He's over there.
Mr. Shores goes to the young star.
Mr. Everett, may I speak to you a moment? I have startling news.
What's up? Did you hit uranium?
I've just received a most impressive proposition from Geneva Records.
Don't mention that clip joint to me.
Even though it involves $750,000 in capital gains?
Mention it.
They want to buy Laurel Records. In addition to sale price, they want you under an exclusive contract for recordings.
For which they'll pay?
7.5% of all the records you sell.
Man.
No artist has ever received an offer that big.
What about Peggy?
I haven't discussed it with her.
Good. Let me talk to her.
Later in his living room, Vince plays with his dogs.
You know, you're due at the studio in a half hour to shoot that last scene.
Okay. You ordered up some booze, so I can pour a few drinks for the crew, huh?
Yes, Your Majesty.
These dogs aren't getting enough exercise. They're getting fat and lazy.
Why don't you hunt them?
No, I got a better idea. Why don't you take them for a little walk?
Hunk stares at Vince.
What's the matter?
My contract says nothing about walking dogs.
Contract? What contract?
Vince rubs a dog's head. Hunk looks at Vince sternly, then his shoulders drop.
Okay, I'll walk your dogs.
As Hunk takes the two dogs' leash, Vince climbs to his feet.
You know I ain't asking you to shine my shoes or nothing.
A man just takes so much, Sonny. Keep that in mind.
Hunk heads off with the dogs. Later, on the movie set, people leave a buffet table. Four musicians carry off their instruments.
It's been a wonderful party. Let's do it again. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you very much, sir.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Vince?
Vince waves to the departing guests. In a corner of the living room set, a group of men sit drinking and smoking. As Vince joins two seated around the coffee table, Peggy enters the soundstage. She wears a prim skirt and matching top.
Peggy?
Vince rises to his feet as she approaches the set.
Where you been? Almost everybody's gone.
I missed a streetcar.
Let me fix you a blast, huh?
He walks to the bar and puts ice in a glass.
You missed a swell party.
What is it that you wanted to talk about, Vince?
Oh, yeah. See you fellas later, huh?
The half dozen men stand and leave. Vince pours Peggy's drink and hands it to her.
It's about the record company, Peg.
Mush, you coyotes.
Hunk arrives with the two beagles on a single leash. He leads the dogs past the bar.
Who's buying the drinks?
He settles into a chair, then checks spent bottles left on the coffee table. Vince crouches down near the dogs and checks their paws, then looks at Hunk.
Now, what have you been doing to these dogs?
I almost walked the feet off them. I covered 8 miles in 4 saloons.
What are you trying to prove, Dad?
What you said to exercise them. I was afraid the Indians would cut us off at the pass.
I don't see nothing funny.
Vince, what about Laurel Records? What is it?
Vince keeps his gaze fixed on Hunk as he crosses to Peggy at the bar. He relaxes, resting an elbow on the countertop, and faces Peggy.
We got an offer for the label, Peg. It's just too good to turn down.
An offer? What kind of an offer?
To sell out to Geneva Records. Wait a minute. What year the deal? $750,000, a capital gain. That's $225,000 in cold cash for you after taxes.
But, Vince, I don't want to sell out.
I'm afraid you've got no choice, kid.
I know 60%.
That's the way the mob flops. You'd think I was trying to rob you. After all, you're getting practically $250,000.
Dollars? Dollars? Is that the beginning and the end of the world for you? Is there no emotion left in you but the lust for money?
Emotion? What emotion? It's strictly a business between you and me. You said that.
I don't care what I said. We started this thing together. We nursed it and brought it up, you and I. It may be just a ledger page to you and Mr. Shores, but to me, it's part of my life. Oh, go ahead and sell it. I don't care what you do.
As Peggy runs off, Vince watches her go. Hunk eyes the young star skeptically. Vince shrugs.
Nothing but a record company.
It's not just the record company that's bothering her.
Hunk stands and takes off his coat. He approaches Vince.
Tramping on me is one thing, sonny. Hurting a little girl like Peggy is another.
Now, just don't you go getting no ideas, Hunk.
There comes a time when you got to take a hand in the thing, and that time is now.
Don't push me, Hunk.
I'm going to beat hell out of you.
Don't try. You're talking crazy, man.
You know you got it coming, son.
I said don't try.
Hunk punches Vince, who falls into a wall. Vince sidles away.
Matter with you?
Vince blocks a second punch, but Hunk swings again and knocks him down. Vince scrambles to his feet.
Now stop it, Hunk. Just stop it. Stop it.
Hunk gets him twice more.
Get up and fight, you yellow punk.
Vince wipes his mouth as he stands.
I don't want to fight you, Hunk. I told you I don't want to fight you. Do you hear?
Hunk throws a right hook. It hits Vince in the throat and knocks him backwards over a couch. Vince grips his throat as he lies panting. Hunk throws the contract at Vince.
Here's your contract.
Hunk stops and stares at Vince.
What's the matter?
He crouches down beside him.
Vince!
Hunk checks Vince's neck.
What's the matter?
He gets up and rushes frantically to the stage door.
Somebody get an ambulance! Get an ambulance! Hurry up!
Later, an ambulance speeds around a corner, its lights flashing in the night. At the studio, medics wheel Vince on a gurney. Onlookers follow them to the back of the ambulance. The two medics lift the gurney and slide it into the back. As one climbs in alongside Vince, Hunk follows. A second medic slams the rear door shut. The ambulance takes off and zooms through an intersection. Later at the hospital, Peggy and Hunk sit in a waiting room. Peggy stares into her lap. Hunk gazes off, his chin resting on his clasped hands. They spring to their feet as the doctor enters.
Well, it was a close call. The blow hit him in the larynx, or Adam's apple, causing it to swell and cutting off his windpipe. We had to do a tracheotomy.
What's that?
Cut a hole in his windpipe down here so that he could breathe. Now, the big thing is his voice. And a blow like that can change the whole structure of the voice box.
You mean he might not be able to sing?
That's right. We'll have to wait a few days until the swelling goes down. We'll see. You can visit him in about 24 hours, but please don't let him talk.
Hunk stares ahead grimly. His shoulders rise and fall with each anxious breath. Now in a hospital room, Vince stares up blankly from his bed. A white gauze bandage is wrapped around his throat. He turns his head weakly, showing a bruised jaw. A nurse opens the door and lets in Hunk and Peggy. The two visitors go to Vince's bedside.
How you feel? Get you anything? Bottle of whiskey or something?
Vince shakes his head.
I want you to know I feel terrible, son. I can't hardly find the words to tell you how bad I do feel.
Vince blinks, watching Hunk.
It's an awful thing I did. If I could only take it back, I cut off both my arms up to the elbow, and that's no lie.
Hunk's gaze drops, and he shifts on his feet.
I can't ask you to forgive me. I just want you to know I don't think I'll ever forget it.
Hunk hangs his head. Vince swallows, then reaches up and draws Hunk's brow to his chest. As Vince pats the back of his friend's head, Peggy watches discreetly from a few feet away. Hunk straightens and wipes his nose as he walks off. Peggy goes to Vince's side and smiles. Vince reaches out and takes her hand. He draws it to his lips and gives it a kiss.
Look fine. We talked to the surgeon, and he thinks the operation was a success.
Vince crosses his fingers and waves them gently. Peggy smiles.
Tell me what happened in the fight and the fact that you wouldn't hit him. I think it was wonderful, Vince. It was an act of true love. Yes, it was. Don't be afraid to love, Vince. Because I love you.
Peggy leans close to him and cradles his face in her hands. They press together, cheek to cheek. Vince strokes Peggy's hair as she lays her head on his chest. Later, in Vince's living room, the doctor uses a tongue depressor and flashlight and inspects Vince's throat. Peggy and Hunk look on.
How's it look, Doc?
Looks just like it did last week, Mr. Everett. Completely healed.
Vince rubs his throat.
Doesn't feel too good.
Well, the injury is healed and the surgery was successful. Your larynx looks as good as it ever did. Whether or not your voice will sound like it did before can only be determined by trying it.
Sure. Try it. Saying it's easy, but what if it's not there?
Now, look, Mr. Everett. These morbid fancies of yours are doing you no good. Unless you get hold of yourself, you'd be a psychological mute, musically speaking.
Give it a try. Gotta find out sometime.
I don't know, Pig.
Well, now's as good a time as any.
I got nobody to play for me.
Peggy walks across the room and opens a door. Vince's musicians step in.
Come on in, fellas.
Yo, Vince. Hi, Vince.
How are you? Let's go to work. Pretty big audience. Give a man stage fright.
Now, Vince.
Peggy kisses his cheek.
Okay. But just with the piano. The rest of you guys, what?
Well, we'll wait in the other room.
Peggy leads the others out.
Doc, you better stay here, okay?
All right.
Okay.
As the accompanist sits at the keyboard, Vince bows his head and nervously strokes the piano. Vince leans forward and clenches his fists. In the next room, Peggy, Hunk, and the musicians listen by the door. Vince and squares his shoulders.
You're so young and beautiful, and I love you so.
He touches his throat.
Your lips so rare, your eyes that shine, shame the stars that glow. So fill these low.
Peggy leads in the musicians who begin to play. Peggy gazes lovingly at Vince.
And kiss me tenderly. Then you'll be forever young and beautiful to me.
Vince turns to face Peggy.
You're so young and beautiful. You're everything I love. Your angel smile, your gentle touch.
Peggy's mouth lifts in a smile.
I'm dreaming of. Oh, take this heart.
Peggy goes to Vince, who wraps an arm around her.
And never set me free. Then you'll be forever young and beautiful to me.
Vince caresses Peggy's shoulder. Words appear. The end. Jailhouse Rock, made in Hollywood, USA by Avon Productions Incorporated. A Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer release. Fade to black.